This show is part of the Goblin Broadcast Network, mate. You probably knew that, though.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 17. I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. The Tome is a D&D review podcast, and in this episode, we will be hacking and slashing our way through Dragon 356 and Dungeon 147. Welcome again to episode 17 of The Tome, Dragon 356 and Dungeon 147, and some quick bits of news about the show. First of all, I've got some interesting things planned for the future. The next episode you should be hearing after this is actually an interview that I did with author J.C. Hutchins of the patio book Seventh Son, wildly popular author. Really cool guy to talk to. We talked a little bit of gaming. We talked a little bit of story. We talked a little bit of D&D. And, of course, we talked about his patio books. So that should be interesting. I'm also in the works on talking to some other game designers and authors about their books. So I'm really excited about introducing interviews every now and then to this show. It's not something I'm thinking that we can do every episode. It just takes a lot of time to organize and get people together and record that kind of thing and then put it into a show and edit it all down and all that kind of stuff. But it is something I'm looking to do more of is including interviews in the show. So I'm really excited about that. So look forward to that. And I've got some exciting things coming up this summer. So that'll be really cool. Be expecting to hear some interesting things coming out of the Tome in the next month. Probably announced at the beginning of June. Keep an ear open for that. Not a lot of big D&D news this time around. It hasn't been that long since I recorded the last episode, so that's probably going to be why. I will continue to keep you up to date, especially since you're going to get some D&D news as you listen to the Dragon review this time around. So we'll save it for that. I'm going to give you a quick word from another show, let you hear about these other podcasts out there. These are some guys that I've been really enjoying lately, so give them a listen, and here you go.
This is the Kingfish,
along with the Vicar
and Super Geek Billy
from the Geek Label Podcast.
Sure, there are other geekish podcasts out there.
But really, who are we kidding?
Do you want your geek news?
Do you want your thoughts shared across the globe?
Looks like you've got mail waiting.
Do you want a chance to win amazingly cool t-shirts?
Well, the game is afoot.
News, information, prizes.
We'll bribe you if we have to.
A look at any and everything from hardcore geek to stealth geek.
And if you're not careful, you may learn something before it's done.
Don't believe me? Then check out this completely random man on the street testimonial.
Hi, this is George Takei. I love listening to the Geek Label Podcast, and you will too.
Get your geek on with the Geek Label Podcast.
Another quality product from Geek Label.
Enjoyed their show lately. They're really cool guys, and I really look forward to doing some stuff with them in the future, so keep an ear open for that kind of stuff too. Dragon Magazine, issue 356. And this issue is interesting. It seems to have a focus on draconic creatures. Appropriate, of course, for a magazine called Dragon. Interesting, because traditionally this has been part of a Dragon Magazine annual. They usually put out a Dragon Magazine annual every year that is focused on dragons and draconic things and that kind of stuff. So I'm interested to go through this with you and let you know sort of what to expect in here, and I'm wondering if maybe we won't be seeing an annual because of the big news, Paizo losing the magazines. The editorial talks a little bit about that whole issue and the process of losing the magazines and the license and what to do now with your subscription maybe going past the date that's given here. Let's go ahead and jump right into the first watch section here. Previews, notes, news, all that kind of stuff. A lot of this has been covered on the podcast in the past, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it just because we've started to add that news section into the show. I'll at least mention the broad strokes here. New releases, Expedition to Under Mountain, I've talked about. Originally a Forgotten Realms dungeon, now being made part of the Expedition series that can be placed into any setting. And it's got a good mix of authors in there. Just flipping through and looking at some of the authors involved, the ones that I have come to trust, Ed Greenwood, Sean K. Reynolds, and then they, of course, list Eric L. Boyd. The next new release is The Sinister Spire, which is a second adventure in a series that started with the Barrow of the Forgotten King. This time taking players from 4th to 6th level. And then we have the Eberron book, The Forge of War, which fills in information about sort of what's happened on Corvair during the last war. Fills in sort of that history that has been left fairly vague in the past. Getting into stuff that maybe we haven't talked about, Paizo is putting out a new book in their Game Mastery series, a new module called Crown of the Kobold King, which is all about, of course, kobolds. And this ties into their free RPG Day release, which is called Hallow's Last Hope, which is sort of a prequel, I guess, preview adventure, if you will, to the Crown of the Kobold King storyline. This looks interesting also. Hero Lab, a new bit of software coming out from Lone Wolf Development. Their website is wolflayer.com. Has a new bit of software to help you put together, I guess, games and characters, and it's got rules set into it. It's designed to be used with the D20 rules, but it will offer expansions for other systems like RuneQuest, Mutants and Masterminds, World of Darkness, and it sort of resolves a lot of the rules issues for you. It takes the rules and it just sort of tells you what happens, and you don't have to worry about all those numbers and all that kind of stuff. So that looks interesting. Going along further, Paizo's got a new Game Mastery flip map. I hadn't noticed the flip map products from Game Mastery before, so that looks interesting. It's sort of a battle mat or whatever, already designed, beautiful artwork, nice maps, already laminated and marker ready. So you can draw all over it, you can do whatever you need to with it. Just get out your paper towel, wipe it off, and you're good to go. And so it's a nice little thing. The real kicker on this for me is going to be price. I mean, this could be something really useful in a tabletop game. This one focuses on the classic sort of two-story tavern. So if you've got a tavern and you want to have some sort of adventure going on, then you've got this flip mat and boom, you've got it done. You don't have to draw anything. You don't have to put on all the little tables and the chairs and the windows and the doors. It's boom, it's done. It's ready to go and it's beautiful. So that could be something really cool. And then, of course, you flip it over and you've got a different map on the other side. If this is a cheap product, I might be picking some of these up with my credit that I picked up with the ending of Dragon Magazine, as we know it. There's some news from Green Ronin. Some new Freeport things coming out. I've really enjoyed running the Freeport stuff that I've been playing in. Freeport is a cool setting, sort of a different mix. I mean, it comes off as a very sort of pirate-like setting, but it's much more complex, much more in-depth than that. And so I've really enjoyed playing a game in the Freeport setting, and that's been going really, really well. Actually, it's been placed into the Forgotten Realms, which is a setting, of course, that I love. But Freeport has gone wonderful for me, so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with this new expansion. 9th-level characters is what this one is designed for. So, and it's called Dark Wings over Freeport. So that one looks interesting. Let's see what else looks cool. Oh, there's a convention going on called Ziggurat Con for soldiers in Iraq. They are going to be setting up a convention there. The first ever role-playing and anime convention to be held in a war zone, as they say. The one thing that they would like help with, of course, is they need help with books, games, materials, that kind of stuff. They've got some really good sponsors involved in that, and if you want to help them out, that sounds like a really cool thing. Devil's Due, the publishing company that has been putting out like the Driz graphic novels and all that kind of stuff, has the Volume 2 for the Dragonlance Chronicles, that's Dragons of Winter Night, coming out very soon. Dragons of Spring Dawning, the monthly series, is in the works, or I guess they're in the middle of it. And the final issue of Streams of Silver for us, the Drizzt fans out there, is also in the process of coming out. So look for those kinds of things. I'd be interested in picking up the Dragonlance Chronicles myself. Maybe I'll wait, though, until Volume 3 comes out so you can sort of get the whole story that way. And then there's that thing I sort of mentioned briefly earlier, the Free RPG Day. Sort of taking a page out of Free Comic Book Day, for those of you that are big comic fans like myself. The industry has sort of put together this day of free comics, and so it looks like somebody got the idea, hey, why don't we do this for another wonderful, geeky passion that people have out there? Let's put together a free RPG day. So the goal, as they state, is to get consumers inspired to play new RPGs. There will be no overstock, retail-priced, dead products that nobody could sell. They're putting forth high-quality, brand-new stuff and for free RPG Day. Check with your local gaming store to see if they're participating. You can visit freerpgday.com to find out. But they've got publishers participating like Goodman Games, Green Ronin, Paizo, Troll Lord, White Wolf, all kinds of different people getting involved in this, and I think it's going to be really cool. My only thought is it's too bad WotC couldn't get involved, Wizards of the Coast couldn't get involved, the biggest gaming publisher out there, but maybe they'll pull it together yet. I don't know. All right, so now into the articles. First up, Top 10 Most Wanted Dragons in D&D by Tim Hitchcock and Nicholas Logue. Special thanks to artist Brom, Clyde Caldwell, Jeff Easley, Phil Foglio, Todd Lockwood, et al. Lots of different artists involved in this one because they take images from well-known dragons throughout D&D history. And there's some interesting ones, and basically it's really funny. It sort of goes by known aliases and characteristics, layers, associates, wanted for, reported sightings, warnings, all kinds of fun little information. You know, they show a reward for different things. This is a fun article. Honestly, when I first saw this, and I loved reading through this, this is the first one I went to in the whole magazine. It was hilarious. It was entertaining. It was informative. I only wish they had included it in the April issue because it was funny. And April's supposed to be the funny issue. But this was a really cool one. It's only four little pages, and it's not short little blurbs and an easy read, but it is really cool to look at, and I had a lot of fun with this one. Next up, Ferris Dragons, The Return of Heavy Metal Dragons by Kevin Bass and Eric Jansing, illustrated by James Zong. And this gives you some new dragons, Ferris Dragons, although not actually all of them being Ferris metals, but that's hardly the point. Some qualities for them, ecology, that kind of stuff, have just general information about what Ferris dragons are. They even give you some information about how to convert the half-dragon template to include the Ferris dragons. You have the lawful evil chromium dragon, which has a breath weapon of a line of solid ice. Ow. You have the lawful evil cobalt dragon, which is an air-based dragon with a breath weapon of pulsing magnetic energy. You have the iron dragon, a lawful neutral fire-based dragon with a breath weapon, two types, either superheated sparks, dealing half electricity, half fire damage, or a cone of sleep gas. You've got the lawful evil water dragon, the nickel dragon, and the nickel dragon has a breath weapon of corrosive acid gas. You've got the lawful good fire dragon, the tungsten dragon, and it has a cone of sand that deals half bludgeoning, half fire damage. Then you get the core beliefs article, Hextor, by Sean K. Reynolds, illustrated by Andrew Howe, cartography by Robert Lazzaretti, which William very poignantly noted is the Paizo mapping monkey. Which I hope, Robert, if you're listening, that's not an insult. You do a lot of great work. But I just like that term. I thought it was funny. So you get core beliefs of Hextor. Continuing on in the core belief vein of really fleshing out those core beliefs from the player's handbook of the core gods of D&D, at least since third edition. Which, when this is all said and done, I hope they collect the core beliefs and put them out in a hardbound, because that would be, if you're running the core gods, that would be essential, I would think, to running a really good campaign, a really fleshed out, complex sort of civilization where these religions exist. You get a whole bunch of information about what it's like to follow Hextor. Hextor being a brash, warmongering deity. You get some basics. You get the holy books. Information about the Great Kingdom from the Greyhawk setting. You get information about what the role of a cleric of Hextor is. How they are related to other religions. How their assassins work. Blackguards. Holidays. You get some myths to help you flesh out and understand the faith better. Some prestige class suggestions, some magic items, some new spells, NPC contacts for clerics, and a planar ally of a nightmare of sorts. Some information to sort of flesh out that. Next up, Confession, A Tale of New Dineen by Paul S. Kemp, illustrated by Ramon Perez. And this is an interesting bit of fiction. Dragon hasn't done a lot with fiction in the recent years. It used to be a staple in the magazine. They used to do it all the time. It never been my favorite part of the magazine. I read the magazine because I want to get into gaming stuff. And as much as fiction is part of gaming, it's not really what I was looking for in the magazine. But it is interesting that they brought it back. I wonder if they're not going to do some more fiction with the end of Dragon coming up in the future. But you've got a decently lengthy bit of fiction here. And Paul S. Kemp is known to be a very capable author. So check that out. Then we have an ecology article, The Ecology of the Lenorm, following along with the Dragon theme, by Jacob Fraser, illustrated by Peter Bergting. And the Lenorm, for those who may not know, is a draconic sort of creature. They're not necessarily true dragons, but they're all a very powerful sort of draconic creature. They tend to be wingless, as I recall. They don't have wings. But you get your normal history, you get your physiology. Talks about some different types, figure out a little bit about the origins and where it came from, the psychology of the different Lenorms. All in all, interesting creatures. I've always enjoyed the idea of having Lenorms around, sort of a descendant or a relative of the dragon, but clearly almost evolutionarily different sort of creatures, in that they look draconic, but they don't have the wings and they don't have some of the other aspects of normal dragons. Then we get the Savage Tidings article, Into the Abyss, by Robert J. Schwab, illustrated by Ben Wooten. And here we get to find out a little bit about some of the background of what's going on in Savage Tides. We have a section on what do you know about Demogorgon? How to replace PCs at this point in the game? You find out a little bit about the Planar Marketplace, buying things on other planes that might be useful. And so you actually get a fairly sizable series of magic items to go along with something you might buy on this other plane. And then you get some updates on affiliation, some of the organizations and memberships that you might have picked up throughout the adventure. They give you some updates on, at this point in the game, here's what's going on with the Dawn Council. Here's what's going on with the Scarlet Brotherhood. Here's what's going on with the Ullmen. Here's what's going on with the Witch Wardens, or whatever organizations you might have bumped into. There's more than what I've just mentioned to you also. Then next you get Volo's Guide, Worms of the West, East, and South, by Brian Cortijo, with special introduction by Ed Greenwood, as usual, illustrated by James Zong. Now, there used to be a series in Dragon Magazine written by Ed Greenwood on a regular basis called Worms of the North that sort of detailed every worm, every dragon in northern Faerun with some history and some, I mean, it was really fleshed out, really detailed information. But this article sort of fleshes out some of the major worms, some of the major dragons in the other directions of the west, east, and south. So you have one worm of the east, you have one worm of the west, you have one worm of the south. And they sort of give you lots of information about who those dragons are and what they're all about and some of their personality and that kind of thing. It looks interesting. If you're looking to run a campaign based with dragons, then this in the Forgotten Realms, then this would be very useful. And it matches the theme of the magazine being very draconic, so that works really well. And actually would have worked really well if they would have sort of synced this issue release with Dragons of Faerun, which is also a lot of information about dragons, and I'll be talking about that in an upcoming review either the end of this month or beginning of next month, so look forward to that. I have some interesting things planned for that, and I'm really excited about it. Then you get Eberron Dragon Marks, The Gathering Stone, by Tim Hitchcock, introduction by Keith Baker, illustrated by Tyler Walpole. It talks about this location in Eberron called The Gathering Stone. It is in the northern plains of Dargoon, for those people who are familiar with Eberron. And it's a sort of gathering place. It's this obelisk that sticks out of the ground. And people go there to trade and to find spouses and to drink and to fight and to sign treaties and all that kind of stuff. So goblinoids are traveling there all the time to get information and to trade things. And there's sort of a makeshift camp set up around it. And it just sort of gives you some of the history of that place and some of the goblins that you would find there that are sort of in control of that area. Some of the games and contests that might go on there. Some of the other events that might occur at this gathering stone. Then you get Sage Advice by Andy Collins, illustrated by Andrew Howe. And this time around, the sage talks about critical hits, damage, and healing. Then we get into the class acts section. And having looked through this before, I don't think it's going to take a real long time to look into this. But first up, you have the adventurer section, titled Bard Guide by Amber E. Scott, illustrated by John Hodgson. And Bard Guide is in the same vein of all the others that Amber E. Scott has given us. It's sort of a cheat sheet for a bard. So if you've got a bard or somebody playing a bard and you're not, they don't know much about bards, photocopy this front and back, hand it to him, and said, here's your cheat sheet on how to do a bard really well. Then you get Arcane, Occult Mutations, by Tim Hitchcock, also illustrated by John Hodgson. And basically, it gives you different sort of mutations that you might take for a character. Bleached pupils, amphibious, corpse flesh, lidless eyes, toad warts, midnight pupils, rune scarred, unnatural aura. Each one of these comes with role-playing ideas on how to make this an interesting thing for your character and for your character's personality and what that might mean for him. It also gives you some sort of a benefit, but it gives you a drawback to balance it out so you're not becoming more powerful by taking these. You are getting some benefit, but you're also getting some negatives with it too. For example, bleached pupils. Your eyes are pupilless. You just have blank white eyes. You get bonuses to intimidate checks. You get bonuses to save against gaze effects, but you are light sensitive. So if you're in the sunlight or if you have a daylight spell cast around you or something like that, you might go blind, you might be dazzled, that sort of thing. So you sort of get these benefits and drawbacks tied to these mutations. Then we get Divine by David Schwartz, illustrated again by John Hodgson. And this is Aztec Mythos 3. By the time this guy's done, and I don't know when that'll be, I don't know how many of these there's going to be. They don't give you a lot of hints to that as far as I can tell. But by the time this is done, if you want to play a game in an Aztec type of setting, this is going to have a lot of information for you on that. And if you could collect all the articles that have these Aztec mythos, it's really well done and it's really detailed and it's very interesting. I don't know that it's my thing. I don't know that, you know, at this time in my gaming career, I don't know that I want to be throwing in a lot of Aztec mythos, but if I ever get in the mood to do some of that, this is going to be essential to do that because it's really cool and really detailed on how to do that. Then from Warrior, you get Mercenary Companies by Paul Leach, illustrated again by John Hodgson. And they give you a couple of examples of mercenary companies. You get the Scots-Irish Galaglass, And so it's you get an organization and the benefits of joining the organization and what you have to do to join that mercenary company. You get the German Landsknechts. And I have no idea if I'm pronouncing either of these correctly, so I guess you'll have to deal with that. And so you get some information about that sort of real-world-based mercenary company and what it might look like in the gaming world to join such a thing. And then you get into the comics. We're down to Nodwick, Dork Tower, and Order of the Stick, obviously with Dragon and Dungeon sort of going away from this format soon. The comics issue is going to be a bit of a tender issue for people, but the comics, like usual, are brilliant. Actually, every single one of them is actually really, really good. I laughed a lot with these, and it's really tough to pick the best one of the issue. I'm going to say not Order of the Stick. As much as I love Order of the Stick, it's a little bit wordy. I'm going to say Nodwick had a really funny point to it, and it was really entertaining. So, best comic of the issue is Nodwick. And that is Dragon Magazine, issue 356. Next up, we get to hear about Dungeon Magazine from William Paul. So I'm just going to go ahead and play that for you right here. Here is Dungeon Magazine. Take it away, William.
This is William Paul with a review of Dungeon, issue 147, the June 2007 issue, hitting newsstands on May 16th, 2007. Now, as always, I will start the review with the recurring articles in the back, then move to the three scheduled adventures. The first of the recurring articles is Dungeoncraft, titled Planar Adventures, written by Wolfgang Bauer, illustrated by Kyle Hunter. The details of this article deal with running a game in the Outer Planes. Mr. Bauer does a very good job of providing various tips and strategies in regard to handling it. In the article, he provides three rules for running a good planar adventure. First rule is drop names like crazy. You know, the PCs may be the focus, the spotlight of the adventure, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're the biggest players in the adventure or in the environment that the adventure takes place in. You know, the Outer Planes is the realm of the deities in most cases in most D&D games. So the characters might run into various people that, you know, are larger than life, literally. So don't be afraid to throw names out and, you know, have tons of cameos of people going, of deities going about just their everyday business. The second rule, never over-explain. If you have a somewhat outrageous idea for background purposes, you know, just mention it. You don't need to go into too much detail, and just let it go. Another rule it says is don't be afraid to put the PCs on the spot. The article indicates that you know, a party can go from feeling, you know, everything's fine, everything's good, to an oh my gosh, we're screwed in a matter of just really a few seconds. And the better that you're able to do that, which the article does provide suggestions and such, is a fun way to run a planar campaign. I really like this article. There is one amazing suggestion, I'm not going to say what it is, but that Mr. Bauer provides for running a plausible adventure in the Nine Layers of Hell for a first-level party. It's a feasible option. And they would have the capability of surviving. Great article. Next article for the campaign workbook, The City, is titled 100 Shops and Taverns, written by Russell Brown, art by Kyle Hunter. This article is pretty much just as it says. It's a list of 100 various shops and taverns. As you're going through, you know, the article indicates that, you know, when characters go into new city, a new town, you know, what do they see? What type of shops do they find? You know, DMs get into the rut of just saying, oh, well, there's this type of shop. There's, you know, butcher, baker, candlestick maker. You know, there's a little bit of a detail here that, you know, you can just roll randomly and, you know, a percentile roll and have what you're looking for, or you can just pick from the list. Some favorites that I saw just, you know, perusing slightly is Gobbles, an inn for small creatures run by goblin triplets. Not Me, that's N-O-T, Me, a seller of costume and disguise kits in competition with Not Me, that's K-N-O-T, Me, Rope and Bridle Company. Then The Forum, a small community theater. This article does a really good job of providing that little bit of extra flavor to a game that a DM might be running. So it's really, really good article. Next in the campaign workbook is a critical threat. For those unfamiliar with what the critical threats are, the critical threats within the campaign workbook are your big bad evil genius, your evil villain, are statted out. You know, maybe they're from prior editions of the game. Maybe they're a new villain from, you know, new campaign setting. I know that it was the Lord of Blades that was a critical threat, you know, months and months ago when Eberron first came out. The topic of this critical threat is Demo Dragon. And it is written by Mark McArthur, illustration by Julie Dillon. For those of you unfamiliar with who or what Demo Dragon is, it is a two-headed colossal dragon that first appeared in the, I believe, 1980s D&D Dungeons & Dragons cartoon series. Reading this article spawned off so many memories. I can't wait to use this on some players. Just as a type of a teaser to provide you with a clue of what you would be dealing with. Demo Dragon is a CR21 creature, has 28 hit dice, and one of its special abilities is Shattering Breath. The two heads of the Colossal Dragon, one has a fire breath weapon, one has an ice breath weapon. If the two heads use their breath weapons on the same turn, at the same time, the Shattering Breath has the capability of removing hardness from items and dealing damage to them, making it very easy to break them. So, very, very tough opponent for your high-level characters. I hope that I'm not the only one that will be able to take advantage of this particular critical threat. Next, we have the Map of Mystery on the last page of the magazine. The Map of Mystery this month is Karadad, the Dwarven Cliff City. And this map has all sorts of features of a dwarven city. I'm sure not all dwarven cities are set on a cliff, but hey, when you're down in the bowels of a mountain and there is a cliffside, hey, why not take advantage of it? As I mentioned last month in regard to the Map of Mystery last time, there's no listing of who actually is the cartographer for the Maps of Mystery. But I did some checking, I did some research, and I found out that all the Maps of Mystery that have ever appeared in Dungeon are the work of a artist named Christopher West. And so he's the one that should get the kudos for such a good map this month and prior months. This map, some of the features in it, shows the various cliffside enclaves, the dwellings and such. There's one of the levels is indicated for a market. It gives a detailed view of the throne room for the, the Dwarven Thane. And main courtyard, the gates of the city down at the base of the cliff. There is one of the entrance archways on the cliff face says a steam drake hangar. I'm just scared to think what that could possibly be. Next, we come to the first of the three adventures in the magazine, the low-level adventure, low-level module. It is intended for a party of four fifth-level characters, titled The Ondorian Job. Ondare is where it takes place, the nation of Ondare, in the Eberron campaign setting, and it is a bank heist. Now, I can only assume that this is an homage to The Italian Job. A great movie, I believe it's been made twice, and you know, possibly based on the book, I'm not sure. I've never seen either of the two movies, but I would have to think that, having absolutely no knowledge about the movies, that this at least tries to take some inspiration from that movie. The module is written by Craig Shackleton, illustrated by Jeff Lobenstein, cartography by Rob Lazzaretti. As I said, the setting is in Eberron, with an urban setting, and the basic premise of this adventure is a bank heist. The party, the group, is hired to break into a Kundark bank vault to retrieve an artifact that has a demon lord trapped in it. The person hiring the party to retrieve this artifact, it works with the Church of the Silver Flame and wants to get the artifact in the church's hands so it can be properly destroyed. I can only assume it's based off or inspired by The Italian Job. It looks like a very good, very fun adventure to run. There's a few different NPCs that the group would run into that could or could not betray them very easily. I believe it gives different options in regard to, you know, several different examples of, okay, if you want to have the NPC betray the party at this point, or at this point, and so, or not even betray them at all. So, you know, your PCs never know what to expect when going in. And as with all adventures, all modules, I like to point out when there's a new creature that is used in the adventure, give the DMs a means of trying to remember where creatures are in the pages of Dungeon. There is a new creature called a Tool Swarm. It's a CR5 Construct Swarm. And that's really, you know, the name says it all as far as a description. It's a swarm of tools. Overall, very good adventure. Can't wait to run a group through it or even take part in it myself. The next adventure in the magazine, the mid-level module, is called Dread Pagoda. It is for a group of four 10th-level characters. It is part 3 of the Seeds of Sihan campaign arc, story arc, prior to installments of this story arc, this campaign arc, have intrigued me, got my interest a whole lot. I really enjoyed the first two installments. Unfortunately, this last final part, I don't know if I was just expecting too much, but I was really let down reading through this. I did not see the interest in continuing this campaign arc past the second installment. This installment seems rather tacked on, rather forced onto the prior two. The prior two installments seemed to flow naturally one from the other. This seems like it's, you know, hacked on rather forcefully. As I said, it's the third part of the series. It's written by Stephen S. Greer with Tom Gantz, Matthew Conklin III, Stephen Happ, and Ashvan Doyen, illustrated by Udon. The cartography also by Rob Lazzaretti. It is set in a dungeon crawl. Now, as I was saying, it's... I didn't really care for it, but to give you an idea of what it is, why it is I didn't care for it, the prior two installments of the campaign arc involved dealing with a drug an addiction epidemic in a city, finding out where the drug was coming from in the city, dealing with the source there, and then going out to track down where the drug originated and taking care of that source so that it would not become a problem again. This adventure deals with, there's a small piece of the original source that the PCs, weren't able to get rid of, and an evil NPC, picked it up and ran off with it. So they have to track down this NPC and deal with the Yak folk, so that the Yak folk don't fall sway to the evil ooze that is the Sihan. I understand that there are a lot of fans of the Yak folk from Monster Manual 2, and so this adventure might appeal to them. As I said, I could not find myself interested in running or being a part of this adventure. It just did not stack up to the prior two installments. The third adventure, the third and high-level adventure in the magazine, is the ninth chapter of The Savage Tide. It is intended for 17th-level characters. It is called Into the Maw, written by Robert Schwalb, illustrated by Ben Wooten and Warren Mahi. Cartography, once again, by Rob Lazzaretti. I mentioned last time I call him the map monkey. I figure they probably got him locked up in some cage, and whenever they need a map, they just go over to him, poke him with a stick and say, "Hey, give us a map. Anytime I see a map in Dungeon, or occasionally in Dragon as well, it seems like every single map that they have is from Lazzaretti. The setting of the high-level adventure is it's planar and a dungeon crawl. I really enjoyed. I wish my Savage Tide game that I was running was still running, because I would love to have my group get up this high. The basic premise of this adventure is that the group must traverse into the Abyssian Ocean and go to the realm of Demogorgon to save their patron, Lavinia Vanderborn, from her evil brother Vanthus, who is now an undead Death Knight. Vanthus has taken his sister to a prison in the Gaping Maw, the lair of Demogorgon, and there he waits for the PCs to come and try to save her. In this prison, there are various factions vying for control of the prison, and so in order to get to Lavinia and her brother, the PCs have to fight or barter their way through each of the various factions so that they are able to succeed in saving their boss. There is interesting notes of worth are, there is a cameo of an NPC from one of the prior adventure paths. I don't want to go into too many details of who this person is, but if you've played through either one of the two prior adventure paths, you should be able to look forward to a very nice cameo in this chapter of The Savage Tide. There is a tie-in with the Savage Tidings article in this month's issue of Dragon as well. Of course, there always is. The tie-in this month is for the PCs when they're on the Abyssian Ocean. There is interplanar merchants, Mercanes, that the PCs will run into while they're traversing the ocean. These Mercanes have a stock of various items that are available for purchase, and I believe the Dragon article lists their stock of items, but it is a nice tie-in for the players to give the players an idea of what they can expect once they get this to this installment of the Savage Tide. Now, this article does also mention the Fiendish Codex 1 a few times. Obviously, yes, this adventure does take place within the Abyss. Four players that have the Fiendish Codex 1. This adventure does mention in a few places that if you have this book, you can take advantage of a few of the more detailed aspects of the plane. It provides definitely enough information where if you don't have the Fiendish Codex 1, you're still able to run the adventure. But having that book, if you do have it, you're able to provide a little bit more detail, a little bit more depth to your descriptions of the areas and such. You know, possibly use exact stats of fiendish opponents and such that would otherwise just be substituted with something else from one of the monster manuals or whatnot. Also, in the adventure, there is a new monster. Just like the Tool Swarm in the Ondarian job. But his monster is a filth demon, Belarion. It is a CR 14, challenge rating 14 creature. And there is a new item in the adventure that actually, I believe, from the description it gave, it was picked up by the PCs at the very, very end of Chapter 8. This item is called a Wake Portal. Basically, this is the item that allows to move the PCs into the Abyss, the Abyssian Ocean. It is an item that would be applied to a boat. So in this case, with the Savage Tide, the Sea Wyvern, the boat that the characters have had since, I believe, Chapter 2 or 3... And what this wake portal does is it allows the boat, while it's at full sail traveling, to transport to the Abyssian Ocean. It gives the characters the easiest means of being able to access the planar realms and therefore proceed with the adventure. Overall, I think that this adventure is very good. The magazine itself, the entire thing, a lot of good articles. I think the mid-level adventure in this one, not the best, but you can't have everything great all the time. And of course, just because I don't like it doesn't mean that other people won't. This has been a review of Dungeon 147. My name is William Paul, and this has been for The Tome.
Wow, what a great look in the dungeon. Thank you for that, William. I really appreciate you continuing to report for the show. I've got some really exciting things planned for the future on this show, and I've had other people talking to me about getting involved and reporting for the show and doing that kind of stuff. So I think the Tome is headed in a really, really neat direction these days, so I hope you guys stay tuned. And I've got some really cool stuff planned for this summer too. I think I'm getting a little bit excited about what could be happening this summer, so watch out, because I think it'll be really cool. Speaking of feedback, let's see what we have here. Anything I can share with you until things come out. Alright, so I have, hi, I've been playing D&D a while, but just got back into podcasts, and right after the official WotC one, I downloaded yours from the iTunes store link. I thought your review of the Ravenloft book was fair. I'd price it about the same and picked it up because I'm a longtime player of Vampire the Masquerade and had a gift card, so I didn't even pay $30 for it. I'm intrigued by your offer for the Ravenloft play-by-email experiment. If you're still looking for folks, or if there's a queue in case someone drops out, I would guess that I'm too late to get in on it, but I've just gotten out of college and I have been having a hard time finding a stable D&D group to play with. Thanks and keep up the great podcast. Ben Heisler. That's actually really interesting. I got really into play by email right after I got out of college also. I mean, I played a little bit of play by email gaming during college, and I got out of it. I got really into it, I guess, and really built up my gaming on email a lot right out of college, because I moved and none of my college buddies were around anymore, and I had just gotten married, and I just didn't know a lot of people in the place where I moved to. And it's taken me, what, 4 years now since I've been able to really find a stable gaming group. And I guess I can't even say that it's stable at this point, because we've only met, well, right now once, and we're meeting again here this weekend so for our second session. But I have really high hopes for this group, and so I understand that situation completely. And I found that play by email is a very different animal, but at the same time, I think it's made me a better gamer and a better role player. So, and I will talk to you a little bit about the play by email experiment and the Ravenloft game privately. But thank you for the message, and I've had a couple of emails recently about people who only listen to two podcasts, and one of them is the D&D one, and one of them is this one, and I think that's really cool. I'm so humbled by that kind of thing. That's great. I'm glad that people are enjoying the show that much, and that's really cool. I never even had dreamed that I would become that sort of a popular show, you know, that sort of a stable and that sort of a base. And I hope you stick around. I've got some cool things lined up for the future. So that's the feedback for now. Thanks, guys, for listening in. As always, I urge and welcome listeners to help the show in any way you can. One of the best ways is to participate. Send in your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com. Or let me know if you're interested in reporting for the show regularly. You can also instant message me, join the Tome Yahoo group, leave an audio, or call the Tome hotline at 206-984-1159. You can also dig the show at dig.com, vote for us at Podcast Alley, or leave an iTunes review. All of these things help the show get noticed, and I really appreciate that. Most of these can be found at the website at http://thetome.podbean.com. This has been episode number 17, Dragon 356 and Dungeon 147 of My wife is going to come in the door soon. Hopefully she can maybe keep my son entertained long enough for me to read you the news that I flagged. They usually put out an extra issue called the Dragon Magazine Annual, and it's usually focused every year but let's go ahead and jump right into the new, to the, but we're going to, I'll at least mention the big strokes here, the broad stroke with the Bearer of the, a new bit of software coming out, or, which is a country that, from, evolutionary, and it's sort of, would have been, and it matched. And I don't, having skimmed through this before, gotta open my script so I don't forget anything. Most of these can be found on the website at http://thetome.podbean.com. Now let's go think out of order and do the intro from here.